You know, it's so easy when you get a sponsor for the show and you use their services. And I do. It's Karen Locker's Solutions for E-Commerce. Solutionsforecommerce.com/momentum will get you 10% off right now. I've been using her for, I guess it's been a year and change since I first interviewed her. Hired her pretty much right after the show because I'm like, I need everything you're talking about. I've got problems with stranded inventory. And guess what? I had lots of problems with stranded inventory last year as the restrictions were coming through. Boom, she'd fix it. If there's an issue with the photo, fixed. All that kind of stuff. I get refunds now. They just show up. Hey, you know, we're replying to your cases. Here's your refund. My feedback. I don't have to fix my own feedback anymore. It's automatically done. And I see the notes coming through. I still once in a while get an email from Amazon saying, hey, you have some stranded inventory. I send it to her and most of the time it's already been dealt with and fixed. But let me tell you, being a single operator, my wife and I, this just takes so much off our plates. I can't say enough about it. It's Solutions for E-Commerce, the number four, solutionsforecommerce.com/momentum to get 10% off her services. Be sure you tell her I sent you, solutionsforecommerce.com.
Welcome to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast, where we focus on the people, the products, and the process of e-commerce selling today. Here's your host, Stephen Peterson.
Welcome back to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. This is episode 169, Garland Sullivan. You know, Garland kind of lays low, keeps a low profile, but he is part of a pretty large company. Him and Max Abreu was episode 97, run a company from Jacksonville, Florida, and they are killing it, just killing it. I will call them mega sellers, too bad. And they've earned it, you know, and they've earned it with some bumps along the way. And I think that's what I love about these guys is they're willing to say, hey, we made some mistakes. Now, understand, they're 25 years old. It's cool to realize you've made mistakes at 25 because most of the time you can't see them at that age and you don't see them until later on in life. So these guys are just going to continue to kill it. And it just, what good souls, just good people, and just really with good intentions. And I just love the story. Let's get into the podcast. All right, welcome back to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. And man, I'm so excited about tonight's guest because we have met many, many times. We have tried to arrange, but both of us are so busy in our lives. And I'm not even gaining on this guy because he is everywhere. Garland Sullivan. Welcome, Garland.
Hey, thank you, Stephen. I appreciate you having me.
You know, I love watching what you and your partner Max are doing from afar, and it's just so impressive to see such young fellows. Let's get it out there. You're how old?
I'm 25.
You're 25, and I'll call you a mega seller. People hate when I use that term, but too bad. Do you want to say what your sales are, or roughly?
I don't mind sharing.
Okay.
We did 2.6 million last year.
2.6 million in 2016. And so I want people to understand, this is two partners and you're equal partners, correct?
Correct.
Okay, so these are two guys that met in school that have created a business. Actually, they've created a lifestyle. It's more than a business. I think it's much more than a business. Would you agree?
I would agree 100%.
Okay, so I want people to get that perspective so when we go back and talk to the story, they can understand where you are and where you're going. Okay, so let's talk about how you became an entrepreneur. Did you know you were going to be an entrepreneur?
I always did. I wasn't certain right out of college because I had several other job offers.
But you went to school for entrepreneurship.
I did, and I always wanted to be an entrepreneur, but at the same time, that's a big risk right off the bat with no money in your back pocket to fund whatever you want to do.
Yeah, but so, how do you go to school for, I mean, let me understand this. Like, I went to school for accounting because I was going to be an accountant. How do you even know what an entrepreneur is as a kid and decide to go for that? I mean, when was it when you decided? Were you 12? Were you 17 just getting out of school? Hey, I got to choose a major? I mean, what led you there?
Well, I sold duct tape wallets in grade school and duct tape purses and stuff like that. And I was always a grinder. I just knew how to work hard. I would say that's a large attribute to our success, is just outworking other people. I learned that through swimming, and my father especially. And my father is a true grinder, and he's an entrepreneur as well.
So he's in the construction business. What kind of construction does he do?
He does mainly remodels high-end homes.
Okay.
He also builds high-end homes as well.
Now, I'm assuming he probably wanted you to come into that business with him in some way or whatever. Did you get a taste of that business?
Yes, I did. My father definitely wanted that for me, I believe, initially. It is called Garland Sullivan Company.
Oh, that's funny.
Oh, yeah. And it's really funny because whenever I wear his shirt around, people are like, what, you have a construction company too? I worked for him over summer. I was pretty much another, this is kind of bad, but I was one of the lower end guys on the job. I would get the grunt work most of the time, whether it was digging ditches or just moving the heavy stuff around. That was my job.
You think that was intentional on his part so that he could get you the perspective of understanding what that business is really built on?
Definitely. I think it's very important to go from the bottom to the top in anything that you do, because that way you're learning every single aspect of a business.
You know, it's funny when you think about that, that low-end job is really important, right? I mean, I don't think people understand that when they say, well, you know, hey, we can get somebody to you know, work in a warehouse for $8 an hour or $10 an hour, and my time is worth more than that. And that's great. And that's true that, you know, if you're that guy in charge, but just don't diminish the value of that guy that works for $8 or $10 an hour, because quite frankly, they're bringing you a lot of value. Did you feel appreciated at that level? I mean, I guess it's hard because you're the owner's son, but do you get where I'm going?
Yes, no, definitely. I was appreciative. And also I had somewhat respect from my other colleagues because actually I wasn't under my dad. My dad put one of his team members in charge of me. So I didn't actually go to my dad in any situation, really.
So that's a good life lesson. So you felt you gained some perspective. So you did that. And is that when you decided, hey, I don't want to do this anymore? I mean, how do you not go and follow your father?
Well, it was only a summer job. I would work there over summer in high school and then sometimes in college. I was also a lifeguard. I swam through college. So that was where my main priority was throughout college, was swimming.
But you weren't just a swimmer. You were a real competitive swimmer.
Yes. Max and I both were at one point top in the world in swimming.
Yeah, you know, Max was a little humble about it too. Max Abreu is Garland's partner, and his episode is episode 97. And I should point that out. Go listen to it because it'll give you some perspective. But these guys were ranked in the world in swimming. You know, we all see the Olympics and stuff like that. There were very few people in that level, and you guys were ranked. What level did you make it in world rankings?
The best I was 30th in the 50 breaststroke long course, and then 56th in the 50 fly long course.
And there's millions and billions of people in the world, and to make it to that level, that takes a big commitment. So I don't want to. I know you're being humble about it, but it's a big deal. I mean, as a dad, I'd be very proud, as I'm sure yours is.
Definitely were, 100%. I couldn't have done it without them. They gave me amazing support. They came to every single meet and just supported me thick and through.
You know, that's interesting you say that. So here is a very successful entrepreneur, your dad, and yet he took the time out to come to every one of your meets. Did he design that lifestyle business himself, and are you able to build on that?
Yes. And also looking at my father as well, my father, he knows how to work hard, but in his line of work, he has to be there a lot of the time. And a lot of the business is still revolved around him personally, which is what I think that's why he's so intrigued with what Max and I do, and what we do is really that we're building something that we can implement systems, we can implement these things so that it can still flow without us necessarily being there all the time.
But what's so cool is that you're 25 years old and you're figuring that out. That's another cool thing, because it takes, most of us didn't figure that out till later in life. So I'm assuming that he's very proud of that too. Okay, so you worked part-time, you were swimming full-time, and you were going to school in between. And then how did you decide, I mean, was it just assumed that you wouldn't get you weren't going to work for anyone else? I mean, you're that independent. How does that decision come about?
Pretty much where I just knew what we were going to do and accomplish, we could make it. I mean, don't get me wrong, it was a struggle at first. And I mean, both of our parents definitely helped us out at the beginning. Max and I both received $3,000 from each of our families. So
it's like a seed capital, as money to invest. Okay, cool. Well, that's cool. So
$6,000 to invest in the beginning. And we used that mainly as living expenses, actually. The rest, we used credit cards. 0% APR, no annual fee for 12 to 18 months. So we had free money for about a year to year and a half.
And this was a few years ago, right? And were you still in college when you started?
We were technically in college when we started, yes, but not full time. So I don't really count that. Okay. We didn't really know what we were doing, and it was pretty funny, honestly.
Did you? What category did you start buying and selling in?
Toys was our first category, okay, for sure. Then we tapped into grocery a little bit.
And when you tapped into toys, were you selling your college books? I mean, how did you decide that Amazon is the path you want to go as opposed to eBay or as opposed to any other or your own website?
Well, it just already – the people were coming there, and it was relatively easy to flip products on Amazon.
But how did you find out about it? I mean, how did you know that?
I found out about it through Max. Okay. Max was the initial guy that took the initiative, and then I was along for the ride at first.
Okay.
And I was so intrigued by what he was doing, and I was just helping him just to help him. And then next thing you know, hey, we could make some money doing this.
Did you think, you know, when you started that you would be as successful? I mean, could you envision, you know, you're up to 10 employees. I mean, did you envision getting to that level ever when you were thinking about where you were going to start?
I would say yes.
Oh,
because,
cool.
Because we also had high goals just from the beginning. Both Max and I are very ambitious. And I mean, we were short of our goal. We wanted to do 3 million. But our net goal was 20%, and we exceeded that. So we hit some of our goals, but we were short some of them. And I think having that ambition will always help drive and push one another to.
So the fact that you missed your goal, did you fail?
Yeah, we technically failed.
Do you see it that way, though?
No, I don't.
Okay,
I see it as a learning experience. Any failure is a learning experience at our team.
I like the fact that you had multiple goals because, you know, I think if you only set the one goal and it was $3 million and you didn't achieve it, you know, there's a big letdown. But the fact that you were able to hold margin is a very impressive thing while doing that, because you can chase growth just to chase growth. We had a conversation before we started the interview. You know, one of the big focus of the Young Guns, just finished that series, is they are not chasing growth anymore. Every one of them, all five of them. I didn't interview KIB for this story, but I know KIB, and I'm pretty certain I'm safe in assuming she's thinking the same way. Chasing growth for growth purposes, you know, it's an ego thing. It's really not a great business model. And now they can ratchet down on that. And it sounds to me like you guys had already figured that out and ratcheted to make sure that, you know, great growth is great, but margin is what you eat, right? You can't eat revenue. You can only eat profits.
Exactly. I mean, if you're doing $100 million in sales and netting 1%, that's not a big deal. I mean, it doesn't matter.
Well, that's a big deal. I mean, that's a big number, though. I mean, think about that. What you just said, that $100 million, 1%, still a pretty big number.
But my point is, you don't, I mean, my point is of the matter is just the fact that you have to be profiting in order to, that's where your focus should be on making the money, not necessarily getting sales.
No, you're right. You're right. I just, that one example is such a big extreme thing. If it was, you know, $100,000. Yeah. Yeah. No, I get it. I get what you're saying. I think your point is valid. I think a lot of people are reevaluating their business, and I think it's very healthy. You know, I know hundreds of million-dollar sellers now, you know, where a couple of years ago it was, you know, that was a big stretch. I know hundreds of them, but that doesn't mean that they just haven't created a job. And so to go get a 50, I always say this, to go get a $50,000 a year job, you can go sell cell phones at AT&T. They'll pay about 50 grand. And you can do that. And that, if that's your thing, very cool. But if you're trying to create a business, you really need to get that, you know, that income level up. And the only way you do that is by finding the right kind of profitable items to sell. So let's talk about your business. So you guys, this year have really expanded your business. Did you, I know you said you set your goal and you didn't quite reach it. When you thought about it, what led you to believe that you could get there? What was the thinking that said, hey, we could get to this level from where you were? Because you were over $1 million and you more than 2.5 times it. But what would lead you to believe you could do 3x?
Well, we had some great investors as well.
Okay.
That were willing to give us a large amount of money. And we believed that we would be able to hit the goals with those funds. But really it came down to several hiccups along the way that kind of kept us from hitting those goals.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm going to do this. Let's take a break. When we come back, I want to talk about hiccups, because one thing I appreciate about you guys, you're very open and honest that it hasn't been perfect, right? And you guys have made some mistakes, just as we all have. But most people aren't vocal enough to say it, and you guys have, and I really admire that. Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Are you looking for inventory this time of year?
I have just the answer. It's called The List. Yep, that's it. The List. It's a premium sourcing service brought to you by Andy Slammons, where you get quality, actionable inventory from real sellers. These are million-dollar-plus sellers who bring you the finds in real time. Oh, and by the way, they're buying them themselves. Bring your business to the next level with The List. There are a few openings, but it's capped at 100, and they're so close, but you still can get in if you sign up now at thelistishere.com, thelistishere.com. Oh, and make sure you tell Andy I sent you.
Oh, to be that young and be so self-aware. Oh, I wish I was there. Just love this guy. I love his story. I love the fact that they're willing to try new things. In this segment, you're going to hear him admit that he's doing some parts of the business he's really not in love with. He doesn't enjoy it, but it's necessary and he recognizes it. That's self-awareness. I think, you know, hey, we can do all things. No, you can't. And he recognizes it, and that maturity is just going to get him so far. Love this interview. Let's get back into the podcast. All right, we're back and we're talking with Garland Sullivan, and Garland is one of a pair in a business, and they've had an incredible year. Now, let's give perspective. Garland's 25 years old, does have a degree in entrepreneurship, and has really, I was thinking about that. Your experience has to be so much different than your degree. Would you agree with that?
Oh, yes, 100%.
What they taught you in school, how much of that has played out?
Well, honestly, I was very fortunate to have professors in the entrepreneurship program that weren't necessarily professors. They were actually business owners and businessmen.
Oh, cool.
Who owned companies. So they instantly became mentors, not only teachers for me. And one of the most influential books that they made us read was The E-Myth by Michael Gerber. And that definitely helped us think about implementing systems and putting in those kind of tools to make our business efficient without us necessarily being there. So having a business not people-dependent but system-dependent.
And so that's one common thing I hear from you two is you're always – inquiring about systems. I see when you have a question, it's almost always system oriented. That process
I mean, how do you approach that? So let's just talk about that. You have a product you want to bring to market. What's the process that you start, identifying the product and then bringing it to market? How do you go about that?
Are we talking about private label or retail arbitrage?
Let's start with retail arb, and then we can talk private label, because I think there is a different approach.
So for retail arbitrage, we have an X percent that we look for. So for in shoes, for example, we look for 75% ROI or higher. Typically less than 10,000 rank in shoes category. Now, we also, that rank is very dependent on the shoe, because if a shoe has one variation and it's ranked 20,000, we'd still purchase that product.
Okay. Because you know that that's probably the likely one that's going to sell. When it's multiple variations, you're not certain, correct?
Correct.
Okay. All right. So you use that guideline. And then how's your approach to buy it? I mean, are you out there buying it?
No. We have a team of shoppers.
Okay.
So we have four shoppers. And then we also taught our warehouse guys to shop as well if they want to do it part-time as well. And all of our purchases are based off commission. So we have it on a tier structure.
Okay.
We changed our commission from the last time you were on here with Max.
Okay.
Our commission structure is based off of the purchase price. So basically, if the product is bought for $100, the person who bought that product receives 10. So they get 10% of the purchase.
Okay.
And then after $30,000 spent in a month, they are now in the 11% bracket. And then after $40,000, they're in 12. After $50,000, they're in 13. And so on, all the way up to 15% is the cap per month.
And so do you have a minimum purchase price?
No. Okay. Typically, we'd like to see $5 profit, but in that system, that's the only flaw really in that system, is that the buyers aren't going to want to buy something for $10 unless right. they can get 1,000 of them.
Right. So let me make sure I understand this. So if I'm buying a pair of shoes for, is the commission based on the retail, what the retail selling price is going to be, or the purchase price?
The purchase price.
Purchase price. So if I'm buying a pair of shoes and I'm buying them for 50 and they're going to sell for 100, that would meet your requirement, right? Let's assume the rank is correct. And right. so I would then potentially get 10% of that 100?
No, you get 10% of
the 50.
Oh, I mean, yes.
Of okay, 50. Of the 50, yeah. That was the right way to say it. What happens when it doesn't sell at 100 and it only sells at 60?
We lose.
You lose. Okay. But you don't go back after me, the buyer. I met the requirement. You told me the playing field to play in and the rules. I met them. I don't get penalized.
Correct.
Okay.
Now you're also sending in products that you are questionable about. So for example, we have a Facebook group messenger on our phones, and whenever they're scanning products, they'll scan over the UPC and then the cost, and we'll check it just to help them out if they aren't sure.
Okay. And so you have somebody sitting there. I think that's a pro tip. You have somebody sitting there who can verify that information while they're out in the field.
Mm-hmm.
That's
Max and I's
okay.
job whenever they don't know themselves.
But that's a huge tip, because now all of a sudden they get instant feedback, decisions made, and they can make a commitment. That's a good pro tip. Most people wouldn't do that. They would come back with that information and then make them go back. That's an inefficient operation. So the way you're doing it's pretty efficient. Okay, so how much does a person get to spend? I mean, what's their goal? I mean, is it $1,000 a week? Is it $1,000 a day?
Each person is different, and each person gets to decide on how much they are willing to work. And we just encourage them to hit up sales, hit up what they like to buy. It's really up to the buyer. It's not necessarily up to us.
So,
we want them to have the motivation and encourage the motivation to go out and shop.
Why would a person want to do that as opposed to doing it for themselves? Why would they want to do it for you and not do it for themselves? I mean, you must have, you know, seen a pattern.
Yes. So we had one of our employees who who came in and worked for us for about 6 months, and he left and started doing it on his own, really. Mm-hmm. And I really see it as, well, one, we now make every one of our employees sign non-competes. I believe it's, if you don't have the money to do it yourself, why don't you just do it through, I mean, you're getting involved with a person who teaches you how to do it. And not only that, you're not having to put up any of your own money yourself.
Right. So. And they don't have the responsibility, right? When they go home, that's not on them, right, to sell it. Because buying is one thing, selling is another, right? And we all know that if everything worked out perfect, business would be great, but it's not perfect, right? What you thought was going to sell for 100 doesn't all the time. And so that risk, that responsibility, when they don't have that, I think that's attractive to some people. They just don't want that in their life, right?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Okay, so they bring those items back to your warehouse. Is that where they all go, or are there options?
Now, we do have a storage locker when there isn't enough room in the van or trailer to bring it back up to Jacksonville from Orlando. Mm-hmm. So sometimes it'll get dropped off in the storage locker for just a time being, but then it gets moved up to our warehouse here in Jacksonville.
Are they using their own money or your money?
They're using our money.
Okay, so it's your money. Okay, all right. I think that makes clear. So somebody can work as hard as they want. They can earn a decent living. They have to put the effort in, and that works.
Yes.
All right, let's talk.
One of our guys was saying, the best part about my job is that I can work when I want. The worst part about my job is I can work when I want.
So if they're into the 24-hour Walmarts, they can do that, right? They can, you know, if they want to get up and work those shifts. Do you find that some of your buyers have other jobs?
One of our buyers has another job.
Okay. I mean, did they start with other jobs and eventually eliminate them? I guess, you know, is this a good side business for someone or a side hobby, or is it, I mean, it sounds like it's full-time for some too.
So we have two full-time buyers and then two part-time buyers. The part-time are students.
Okay. Oh, good. So that can work around their lifestyle. Okay. I love it. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, then let's talk process for private label. How do you go about finding a private label product? Because that seems to be where you guys have headed quite heavily into, correct?
Yes. So that's where Max and I are concentrating on this year. And so our team will be over wholesale, online arbitrage, and retail arbitrage, while Max and I will mainly concentrate on private label this year.
Are you going after a particular category because, you know, that's interesting to you, or something you know, or are you just looking for profitable products, period?
We're going after a line. We're developing a brand this year, and are in hopes of selling that brand for close to $1 million in a year and a half to 2 years.
Okay, so you're developing a brand that you think can sell, similar to the e-tails model that just occurred, right? If you're familiar with that, right?
Yes.
So you're building a brand, you're going to create a Shopify or a WooCommerce site, get it out there, try to develop it large enough. To sell it for $1 million, $1.5 million, what do you think the retail sales need to be? Is there a number that in your mind you're thinking?
About 1.5 to 2 million.
Okay. So you're thinking if it can get to a $2 million retail business, you think that the value is to sell it for $1 million to $1.5 million.
Mm-hmm.
And you think you can do that in what, 2 years or 1 year?
I think in 2 years, yes.
2 years. No kidding. Have you gone as far as to map that out, what it would look like?
So basically, we have requirements for each of our products. Max and I actually look at this a little differently than he looks at more of products that are higher ranked, really, really well ranked, as in where they're selling constantly a month, and where I look at products that have a high sales value and aren't necessarily selling as many a month.
Hmm. Well, explain why you're thinking that you want to look at that.
Well, I can encourage, so for example, a $100,000 product. If your product sells for $100, so if your product sells for $100 and you sell 90 a month, that's a $100,000 product.
Okay.
And so way I look at it is if we can have a product that does $10,000 a month in revenue and roughly right at $9,000 to $10,000 a month in revenue and then have 10 products that do that, that's $1 million company. That's $1 million a year.
And you want them all in the same brand? So they're kind of in the same category or connected in some way?
They are all in the same category.
Okay. And so logically what you're thinking is, hey, with 10 products, if one waxes, the other one wanes, right? And you can kind of waver and still achieve that. So one might do 11,000 while the other one does 9, right? As opposed to just one all in, because if it wanes, then, you know, sales are off.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Okay. All right. So have you documented the process? That was where I was going with it. Do you say, okay, here's the product. Here, by this point, this stage, all the stages to it, I guess, is where I was going.
So basically, we take Andy Slaman's course. I believe you're in it too.
Yep.
And we definitely live by that. We had our first product be a huge success.
Awesome.
Instantly became a bestseller and then ran out of stock. And then by the time we got to launch it the second time, competition rose and ended up not being that great of a product anymore.
So what's the lesson there? Wait, stop a second, because that's a powerful lesson. So are you, first off, do you credit Andy's course? Andy's one of my sponsors. So, you know, I mean, take it for what it's worth, everyone. I'm all in with Andy. I believe in him 100%. Is his course the reason that you had that success initially?
100%, yes.
Okay, so 100%, right? And I know you guys are all in. So you followed his instructions or his advice. You did everything you were supposed to do, and it just killed it.
It killed it to the point where we didn't buy enough, and we got smacked.
So what's the lesson there? I mean, how do you know what enough is? I mean, that's the thing that I think that's the art, right? But how do you know?
You honestly, it's really hard to predict because we weren't expecting our product to do that well. And I think going into it, you should go into the mindset, yes, our product is going to do super well. So let's be prepared for that.
Did you follow the numbers? I guess that's the question. If you read the numbers correctly, should you have bought more based on what the numbers told you?
No.
Okay. Oh, really?
On the initial investment and everything, we bought 2.5 months of supply.
Okay. So more than you should have. And yet.
And we sold out in a month and a week.
Why? Do you know why? Thinking back.
Well, this was late 2015 on that one. And I believe with our giveaways, with our launches, with our pictures, our reviews, our descriptions, everything was solid. And ours definitely stood out on the page. Hmm. And that's why ours was so successful.
So you did it right. That's it. Yeah. There's a lesson, right? You did it right.
You're right.
So your second product, right? So the first time, and you brought it back and it wasn't as successful because other people are like, wow, look at this amazing product. I'm going to do it too. But your second standalone product, has that come to market yet?
Yes.
Okay.
And that was a huge success as well.
Again, because you followed the rule, you followed the plan, you did all the things, right? As you say, the photos and the listing and all that kind of jazz.
Yes. And we actually, messed up on this one though. We messed up in not getting the brand registered. And because we didn't get the brand registered, we had several people hack our listing and get on our listing.
And so are they still on the listing?
They are still on the listing. We're going through the process of kicking them off now, but it's almost too late to recover the success of that product because of another competitor.
Hmm.
Pretty sad.
Yeah, well, you know, hey, this is the lesson, right? This is the education that you're going through. So obviously product number three, you're going to change your strategy.
So we already have a product number three. Product number three is also super successful, sold out. We also have a product number four and a product number five.
No kidding. Are they getting easier?
They are getting easier. And it's honestly, it's not that difficult per se. Now, I would have to give Max a lot of credit on the private label, because he found the majority of those first couple ones and absolutely got the right people to do the right listings and whatnot and executed them perfectly.
I think the other thing that happens is your self-limiting beliefs get expanded, right? The more you do this, you realize you're saying it, hey, it's not that hard, but it was probably overwhelming when you started. And I think like most things, right? And now you guys are like, oh, we could do that. We've done that already. We can do that, right? Do you see a limit to the number of private label products you could technically do?
Not necessarily a limit, just of our biggest thing is just as long as it fits within our model. That's the biggest deal for us.
That's discipline. That's hard.
I mean, it's necessary. If you're not going to, I mean, we try to have every single one of our products be, I mean, all of our products are over 100% ROI, and, just look for that, look for areas in the market. And yeah.
But that means you're walking away from things that you might've fell in love with, right? That's hard.
No.
No, definitely really. Not. That's a discipline. Let me tell you, there have been some things that I brought, and Andy's like, oh, Steve, that's nice. But boom, or him or Leron just crush my soul. And it just makes me realize it's like, oh, but I loved it. And they're like, that's great. We'll make you money.
That's, yep.
You guys don't have that issue. Wow, that's a maturity. Let me tell you, I'm double your age, and I'm not that mature. So I appreciate that about you. All right, let's talk mistakes. So, you know, your private label stuff is working. It sounds to, what I love is that you guys are investing your time in that. Well, let me ask this before I go there. Do you enjoy that part of the process more than the process of the actual fulfillment and, you know, the shipping and that kind of stuff? Which part of the process do you enjoy more?
For me, I prefer to shop. I'm a grinder. I like going on shop.
Okay. So the developing a product line is not your thing?
It's now my thing. It's right. I'm forcing myself to do it, but it's not necessarily my most joyful thing to do.
That's interesting. Now that I would have expected the other way. How about Max? Which way is he?
Max, I would say his forte is buying online. And he loves doing that and is good at it. And yeah,
that's,
I would say we do private label because we see private label as the future along with wholesale as the future. It's only a matter of time.
But developing the products and stuff, that's not your vision. That's interesting because you're different than most. And but I appreciate the fact that you're self-aware enough to know that. I love that. I love it.
Thank you.
All right, let's talk mistakes. So some things didn't go right, and one of them you already talked about was brand registry. You didn't register your brand, and somebody else came on the listing, and it's almost impossible to get them off, and you're going to fight your way through that. What other mistakes can you talk about? And even if they're generic, because I know one where you went real deep on a product, and you don't have to say the product, but that you're going to be paying for that for a while, right?
Mm-hmm. Definitely have bought a ton of several products that we got smacked on, but that's just part of the game. I mean, you're gonna have those times where you buy heavy and you get stuck with it. And
well, how do you undig that? Right. So that particular item, you know which one I'm talking about. So how are you going to manage that? Did you bring it to another channel, or are you liquidating it, or are you holding it? Kind of looking. All right, now it's become a long-term hold.
I believe we're going to liquidate it.
Okay.
And that's where we just get our money back and move on. That's what we typically do. We are also on Sears, and for our liquidation stuff, we usually use auctionnation.com.
Auctionnation. I'm not familiar with them. And so how does that work?
So we pretty much just create a list of all the things that we're pulling from our inventory and have them shipped there. And they take care of it.
So right from Amazon, you have them shipped, or from your warehouse, or both?
From Amazon.
Okay. So if I have 1,000 of an item sitting there, and then I want to liquidate them. I can put them on Auction Nation, and then so if somebody buys them, then I just have them all shipped from Amazon directly to that buyer. And does Auction Nation take a percentage?
Yes, they do.
Okay. What do you know what percentage it is?
I believe it's 30% of sale.
30%.
Price.
So let's take an item that you thought was going to sell for $100 and you paid $30 for it, let's just assume, right? And so now you're going to sell it. What are you selling it for on Auction Nation? What's your experience generally?
Well, that's the funny thing. They get to decide the price.
Oh, so, ouch.
So it's more of a just a move on thing.
Okay, so it's a sunk cost, swallow hard, and move on.
Yep.
Ooh. What's your experience? What do they generally, what do you see as a general, I know that one of the companies offers a liquidation option, and somebody said it's about 8 cents on the dollar they're seeing.
Okay. No, I would say that's pretty accurate about okay. that.
So you're seeing 8 cents after fees or 8 cents before fees?
8 cents on the dollar. Explain that real quick.
Well, they're seeing of the retail price what they originally thought they were going to sell it for. They're getting about 8 cents. So in that $100, they're getting $8 by the time they're done.
So I look at it differently. Okay. I normally look at it based off the cost that we purchased.
Right, right. And either way.
So I'd say 50 cents on the dot on what we pay for it.
Oh, okay. All right. So 50 cents after their fees or before their fees?
After their fees.
Okay. Okay. Well, that's not bad. I mean, if you think about that,
right? That's for the most part. There's actually been a couple times where we made money. It was actually kind of interesting.
And so that stuff goes away, and then you just move on and just suck it up and move on. That's hard, isn't it?
No, it's just necessary. I mean, we look at it, it's really funny. Whenever we mess up on those kind of purchases, we kind of look at each other and be like, hey, learning experience.
Yeah. Tuition.
Yeah.
Do you tighten your rules then? I mean, or do you realize that you probably shouldn't have bought them anyway? You went outside of your normal, you went with a gut feeling and it was wrong?
I would say in particular product, there wasn't really anything that we could really do. And I think what we're doing is working obviously what we're doing is working, so we don't have too many of those products.
All right. And that particular product, the history should have said, hey, it should have worked. I agree with you. And it didn't. This was the first year, and I agree. I know exactly because I'm in the same boat, so I can appreciate that.
I think there was a ton of people in the same
boat.
Yeah,
yeah. Yep. What do you think your biggest strength is? You said you're a grinder. When looking at what works between you and Max, what makes your partnership work so well?
Respect for one another for sure is huge.
Okay.
And knowing that every day the other person is going to pull their weight. And that's pretty much a given in everything that we do.
But what happens when he doesn't? Because everybody has a down day. I mean, because I'm sure there are days you don't feel 100% and you don't bring it all. How do you get past that?
We just communicate and say, hey, man, I'm staying in today. For example, today would be one of those. I woke up at 8:30, which is late for me. And I said, hey, I'm going to wait at home and just do this from home. He's like, okay, no worries.
Okay. All right. So it's that long-term respect. And I guess also the demonstration over time, right? Because I think people reveal themselves over time. So seeing that, hey, 300 days a year I'm on, I'm allowed to have an off day.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
What do you think his biggest strength is that he brings to the business with you?
His biggest strength would have to be his ability to be involved with and being on top of the movement of Amazon. So, for example, as Amazon progresses, Max is normally right ahead of the curve and where we're going. And when he's there, then I'm able to look at what he's thinking and we can kind of go back and forth on, okay, what should we do? And what action should we take next? What should we change? What should we stop doing?
Do you think, as I think about this and seeing a successful partnership like yours, and most people don't have that. Most people don't experience that. Do you think you'd be this successful on your own? Be honest, if you looked at it.
Definitely not.
Not.
100% no. I would not have been nearly as involved in online at all. I would have definitely done retail for the most part and just grinded it out.
Right.
But I know that's not the, I mean, that's what I'm good at, but at the same time, I leverage what I can get other people to do.
Right.
And do that portion for our team.
That's a mature thing. I bet your dad would be proud, because it's, you know, you recognize that you wouldn't be. That's hard to admit for a lot of guys. And to be 25 and admitting it is a very cool thing. Let me tell you, that's a very cool place to be.
Thanks.
I mean that, because it's hard, because we all think we can do it all, you know, and you can't, and that's okay. Just knowing it, though, that's how you're going to have success. All right.
Knowing
so,
it and allowing other people to, finding other people who are better than you.
And stepping back and letting them do it. That, to me, that's the hard part. That's a maturity. I'm telling you, as a guy more than twice your age, that's a mature thing to say.
Well, thank you. That's definitely what we've done at our facility here, for sure.
It doesn't sound like you guys have a lot of fear in the business. I mean, you've had some ebbs and flows. You've gotten suspended. You've gotten reinstated. All those different things. Is the, and I think the answer is pretty obvious, the fact that you're doing private label, the fact that you're just still doing retail arb and your online arb, you've really kind of widened your net. So it kind of diminishes that fear. Is that fair?
Yes, but no, at the same time, our biggest thing after being suspended was really not only diversify with private label and wholesale and whatnot, it was really just to look at other avenues of income. So that was one thing that I really kind of focused on this last year, is how else can we make money and not necessarily have to do too much work for it.
Hmm. Okay. All right, so what are we going to see this year from you? So you're really working on building this business that you're going to try to sell. What other goals do you have this year? You said a real lofty goal is to double your sales in 2017. You're going to double 2016 sales. That's a pretty lofty goal. What other goals do you have?
Just become more system dependent. I really don't want to be the one answering my phone when I'm at the beach.
Hmm.
On the weekend to the guys that are shopping. So I want to teach them to where they can fully make the decisions for themselves.
And how do you do that?
Implement systems. So
what does that mean? Implement systems. I mean, I get it. I mean, are you documenting the process or training videos, or what do you do?
Strict processes on what a product is considered good or not.
Okay.
And not deviating from that.
Okay.
So being strict on it.
Okay, that's, so hard and fast rules.
Mm-hmm. Harden the rules. Really would like to do that. Really would like to build our private label brand. I would love to hit 20 products. So 20 products under that one brand would be ideal. And I think we can do that. Not a problem. It just takes time.
Have you thought about how you would go about trying to sell a brand like that?
So basically, we had a venture capitalist company approach us recently out of Ponte Vedra here in Florida, and they loved what we were doing, absolutely loved them, and they were actually looking to buy a company on Amazon, and they were going to pay this company $10 million to buy out their brand, and it's a beauty product, and they kill it. And this venture capitalist company wanted to buy them. And they've only been in business for 2.5 years. That's what's most amazing. Or Keepa had only been tracking them for 2.1 years or something like that, which is amazing.
Hmm. Did they buy them?
I don't know yet. They're still in the negotiation stage.
So you kind of have what they're looking for. That's a big advantage, right? You know what they're looking for. Have they outlined what their expectations are, the triggers?
Yes. So basically, we were approached because we were looking at potential other options for funding. And they looked at our retail arbitrage, online arbitrage business, and they were kind of weary to give us money, because all we were doing is taking advantage of the market. There was nothing
proprietary. Right.
Yeah, proprietary, exactly. So they were saying, hey, look, you need to develop more of your private label brands, and we'd love to do business with you guys, because even though you're generating tons of cash and killing it, it's not worth anything. And that was the eye-opening moment.
That hurts. Okay. That probably hurt a little bit.
At least a little. It hurt a little bit, but at the same time, it was more of just, okay, let's change.
You know, the lessons that you've learned in all this, I mean, they just have to take that degree so much further. Man, I'm encouraged. I'm so encouraged, because to see guys your age figuring this out, and then hopefully you showing others, you know, just even demonstrating, I think is going to be a big encouragement for people. Man. All right. You know, the goal of this podcast is to help people move forward who get stuck. You were stuck, right? It wasn't that long ago where you were stuck. So don't forget that. Give us a couple tips that you think that people can go and take and put into their business today that will help them move past the point of stuck.
Be as involved with other people as possible. And the reason I say that is, without the support that we received from our friends and the other people that we connected with online through this wonderful business, we would probably still be stuck. Mm-hmm. And that's crucial, is give everyone the benefit of the doubt until they prove that they are no longer in there or there to help you. And I think that's what I've done a good job of.
Ooh, that's mature too. Dude, you're killing it. Man, I wish you nothing but success. I hopefully be seeing you in a couple of weeks. You know, tell Max I said hey, and I'm so encouraged for you guys. I know you're going to kill it. I can't wait to have you back when you do sell this company. I want to be involved in the discussion as it's occurring, to kind of document the process. So later, you know, 2018, 2019, we could celebrate together. I wish you nothing but success, my friend.
Well, thank you. It's been a pleasure talking with you, Stephen. And along with your blog, I really hope you do an excellent job with your blog and your business this year. I know that's what your passion is, and helping other people. And I know you're doing a great job of that.
I appreciate that. Take care. Hope you enjoyed that series with the Young Guns. Man, it's amazing to see what they're up to. Matt sent me a note saying, hey, Steve, we could take a few more customers in our fulfillment service. That's the service that we were talking about. You heard it from Mitchell. You heard it from a goose. That's what they're talking about, why they've been so successful. Well, he's got an opening for just a few more customers. That you want to talk to Jesse Thompson. That's jthompson@nfsde.com, jthompson@nfsde.com, and you too could be working with the Young Guns. jthompson@nfsde.com. So these guys have built a very successful business with some bumps and some bruises, but they're doing it, and they're not satisfied with that. They want to build out a brand. And if you're not thinking that way, you are missing an opportunity. Now, it's not easy. You heard what it takes. He has an effective partnership. That's hard to find, but if you can find that and you can play off each other's strengths, and you can have, most important, the respect, and it's a two-way street respect, but if you can get that respect level and be able to bring each other along, you too can have incredible success. Great story. ecommercemomentum.com, ecommercemomentum.com. Take care.
Thanks for listening to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. All the links mentioned today can be found at ecommercemomentum.com under this episode number. Please remember to subscribe and like us on iTunes.